Ricky Romero joins us now from beautiful Los Angeles, I think, California. Thanks for doing this, Ricky. We really appreciate it a lot.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Oh, believe me, it's my pleasure. And I promise no one's going to ask you about your hat this time. How have you been paying attention? I mean, we see you on Twitter at RickyRowe24, and every once in a while you pop in with something about a playoff game. So how much attention have you been paying?
I've been, I've watched a few of the games, and I've, kind of, whenever I am watching them, I pay attention to some stuff that's going on. And you know, the playoffs have been interesting. There's been some good series, and, no team's going down easy, and it's very exciting baseball.
You know, you said the very close series, and we had three series in the first round go the limit, and it looks like we have a couple here that might go the limit. All kinds of ex-Blue Jays around. Is there anybody that you're paying special attention to? Any, even in the first round where there were a lot more Blue Jays, the whole infield in Arizona, anybody who you're especially pulling for from your ex-teammates?
I was obviously when Milwaukee and Arizona were playing, obviously I was rooting for Markham, Hilly, and Johnny Mack, those guys that were in Toronto the whole time, since I first started in Toronto, and always good friends, and obviously pulling for a guy like Sobchinski too, came up with the organization. So anytime those guys come in, it's not like I'm really rooting for a team. I can really care less who wins, but I'm rooting for more for the guys when they come in and when they're pitching and stuff like that. I don't like to root for anyone unless it's the Toronto Blue Jays.
Is there anybody that we might surprise us? I mean, we see Jose Bautista every once in a while. We'll tweet about Jose Valverde, a nice little Papa Grande thing, because they're buddies from the Dominican. Are there any non-Blue Jays you're especially close to who you're keeping an eye on in these playoffs?
Not really. Like I said, I'm just watching the games, and, I cheer for good baseball. Whenever you see good plays, like, for example, a few days ago, you had that collision at home plate with Napoli and Miguel Cabrera, and Napoli held on a good throw by Cruz and stuff like that. When you see good baseball, you appreciate the game even more, and just the way the guys are playing it, going all out, leaving it all out there, it's pretty neat to watch.
Were you surprised by how long Napoli had to wait for Cabrera to get there?
In that situation, you always got to, I said it right away because somebody was like, oh, that was a bad play. And I was like, no, it's not. In that situation, you got to go. It takes a perfect throw to get a guy out. And he made a perfect throw and got him out.
And as you know, the playoffs are a beautiful time for second guessing. And just on that play in particular, I say this hoping that you'll confirm what I thought. In a tie game in the bottom of the eighth with one out, there is no way you can pinch run for Miguel Cabrera because he may have a chance to do some huge damage later on.
Wait, repeat.
The idea of pinch running for Miguel Cabrera in that situation, a lot of people wanted him run for. I'm thinking, how can you do that in a tie game?
Yeah, I don't think so either. That's your best player. That's your best hitter. And you never know, in a situation like that. You got to stick with your big guns, and they did it. And like I said, it takes a perfect throw. It's baseball. If he doesn't make a good throw, he's safe, and no one says anything.
Yeah, and the game's over right there. We are with Ricky Romero here. Let me ask you while we're talking a little bit about these playoffs, about the performance of a guy like Justin Verlander last night. They knew that they had no bullpen behind him, and the Verlander had to get into the eighth inning. He 96 pitches through five, but he managed to hit his stride and take it into the eighth. And I got to think, as a starting pitcher and as someone who's on his way to getting to that level, that had to be a performance that made you think, you know what, that's exactly what you do in that situation.
Oh, yeah, that's your ace. And that's the guy that they lean on anytime there's games like that where you need to hit the bullpen. And he came in and he did his job. Verlander has been special all year, and he's a fun guy to watch pitch. That guy goes from 97 or 90.
We lose Ricky there? I think we might have lost Ricky there. We're gonna check and see what's going on. Maybe a bad connection with Ricky Romero, and we will get him back. He's talking about Justin Verlander and Justin Verlander's performance last night, which was not textbook Verlander, but it was the kind of gutty performance that the Detroit Tigers needed from their ace in that situation, and he came through for them with exactly what they needed in helping them to that 7-5 win to stay alive in the series. We have Ricky back. We have Ricky back.
Yeah.
Bad cell phone action. That's all right. So you were talking about how Verlander goes from 97 to 102.
Yeah. I mean, and that's special. You know, he's special to watch pitch, and it's always fun when you get to see a guy like that pitch. Like I said, that's their ace, and that's the guy that they leaned on. So, he did his job.
Do you watch that and go, that's going to be me one day?
You know, I mean, you think about it, yeah. You think about those situations where, you know, you obviously where you want to be in that situation and what you would do in that situation. And obviously, yeah, I want to be that guy that they rely on in the playoffs along with my whole staff, you know. It's something that I look forward to.
It's something that we look forward to a lot as well. There are a lot of people who want to talk to you, Ricky. So let's get to the phones. We are with Ricky Romero. It is the Blue Jay A Day pregame show, getting set for Game 5 of the National League Championship Series. And we begin with Francisco in Toronto. Say hello to Ricky Romero.
Hey, guys. How are you? My question for Ricky is I wonder if watching the playoffs and watching all these Toronto Blue Jay pitchers start to progress through the playoffs, like you've got your Hallidays, your Markhams, wondering if looking at them and feeling the Blue Jays progress to, you know, the franchise where we might be there one day soon in the next couple of years, wondering if you take anything from that as far as, you know, they were in your position in the Blue Jays franchise and whether or not you can see yourself there in a couple of years and those types of things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think our whole organization, the young guys, we see ourselves in that situation. We want to be in that situation, and we understand we have a lot of work to do. Seeing guys like Talibis, and Markham in the playoffs and stuff like that, you know, it's a different ballgame once you get there. You know, everyone's hungry. Everyone wants to, you know, you're playing to win every out and throw as many strikes as possible and stuff like that. So, you know, we're looking forward to it. We're up for the challenge, and I think our organization is going in the right direction.
How far away do you think this team is? You're the third Blue Jay that we've had on so far in this postseason. Eric Thames guaranteed that the Jays would be in the playoffs next year. Casey Jansen wouldn't quite commit that far, but he did think, you know, the talent's there and a lot of the pieces are in place.
You know, like I said, we can, it's good that they think like that, you know, and I think like that too. You know, how far we are, I mean, only time will tell. You know, you can't really put a time frame on what's on how long it's going to take us to make it to the playoffs. It's, you know, it's not easy. And like I said, we have work to do, and it's, you know, and we're up for the challenge. So, I'm hoping, yeah, by next year, you know, we're in the playoffs. Who wouldn't? Like I said, it's easier said than done, and we got to go out there and just work hard and win ballgames.
Do you look around like the fans look around and see, the Red Sox seem to be disintegrating right before our eyes, and the Yankees are getting kind of old, and the Rays are probably going to lose another couple of people, and some of the guys who stepped up can't possibly have years like that again this year. Do you see maybe a window opening up a little bit in the division?
Yeah. You know, window or not window, we still got to take care of our job. We can't worry about what's going on with other teams and stuff like that. We really can't. You know, the window's always going to be there. You go out there and you play in between those lines, you know, and you play to win. And that's what we have to do. We can't worry about what's going on with their organization and stuff like that. We just got to go out there and win ballgames. Simple as that. And by doing that, we just got to continue to work hard.
It is. It really is as simple as that. We are with Ricky Romero. Back to the phones we go. Ryan is in North Bay. Ryan, say hello to Ricky.
Hey, Ricky, how you doing?
Ryan, what's up, man?
I just want to say that I finally got to see you pitch this summer against that series against L.A. in August, and you guys stumped them, and you were great. My question is, what do you guys, what does a pitcher go through in the off season? Do you give yourself, like, your arm a couple months rest, or do you have a routine that you keep up with your pitching?
Yeah, I pretty much have a routine. I go from, we ended in September. My last game was in Tampa. I don't pick up a ball till about late November, early December. The whole month of October, I kind of use it just to rest. You know, it was a long year, and, just use that time to kind of relax and just be in that relaxed mode. And once November comes, I start weightlifting and my conditioning program starts and stuff like that till the start of spring training. But, I try to keep it about as simple as possible, and, for the past few years, it's worked for me, and that's my routine.
How difficult is it to stay in shape over the course of the off season? I mean, you're obviously, you're working out and you don't necessarily have anything to do but work out. But is it tough to stay on the program when you don't have 30 guys around you pushing you every day?
Excuse me, repeat that again. Sorry. It's just kind of cutting out.
That's okay. I'm just asking you how tough it is to stay in shape in the off season when you don't have that whole team around you pushing you every day.
I think this is the time. This is where you're tested. I think it's your off season where you're tested, physically and mentally. You know, you got it, either you want it or you don't. And for me, I go into every off season, it's something serious for me. It's like my job. You know, I treat it as if I'm going out there and pitching. You know, I don't take it for granted. And every time I start my workouts, it's time for me to work. There's no distractions. It takes 2 hours out of my day, and it's time to get to work. And I use it as motivation. I use little things that I go back to during the season, what I could have done better, and I use that as motivation. All right, I'm going to do this better next year, and I'm going to continue to work hard. And you kind of pump yourself up, and I think that's what I do. And, this is the off season where it's tested. And, I feel like it's what helps you towards the end of the year and being strong in the off, building that strength in the off season is very important.
With Ricky Romero here, before we get to the next call, I got to ask, can you share with us any specific things that you might use for motivation this winter based on last year?
Well, obviously, I hate losing. So, I hate the way I went out. I left my last pitch of 2011 was, 3-run home run to Johnny Damon, and that's going to stick in my mind, until I throw another pitch next spring training, and you never want to go out like that, and just little things, that you can do better, walks, not giving up the home runs and certain situations and trusting yourself and, telling yourself you are good and just little stuff like that, and just kind of using it all as motivation and just come back next year and come back just, if not stronger.
I guess that's going to stick with you, but it is kind of amazing that that's what sticks with you and that you find the motivation when this season, career high in wins, your ERA career low by almost a run, career high in innings pitched, best hits per nine innings of your career, best walks per nine innings of your career. This was a breakthrough season for you. And, I guess I kind of feel like I want you to be more positive about it, but I'm sure in the overall, you are.
I'm a humble guy, man, and I'm never satisfied with whatever results I have. Numbers mean the least to me. It's wins, and getting my team to the playoffs. That's the biggest thing for me. I'm not worried about individual stats and stuff like that. I can throw a complete game shutout, and I still go back the next day and see what I could have done better and what I could improve on. I'm just like that. I've always been like that. I've always been hard on myself. And it's just something that it's just a part of me. Do I give myself credit? Of course I do. It's not easy pitching in the big leagues and facing big league hitters, but when I know it, stuff needs to get cleaned up, I do it. And I pay attention to the small details and stuff like that.
All right. With Ricky Romero, we'll take one more call before we take a quick break. Doug is in Brampton. Doug, you're on with Ricky Romero.
Hi. I just wanted to ask Ricky. Ricky, when you go out there and you know you haven't got your best stuff, what kind of physical and or mental adjustments do you make?
Well, the biggest thing is, when you kind of see that your stuff, your stuff is not as sharp as other days, it's mental from there, and you realize that you have other pitches. I think that's why I grew up this year from my rookie year and from my sophomore year. When I didn't have a certain pitch, I didn't know what to do at times, and I was like, whoa, I don't have this pitch, I can't throw it. But I feel like this year I added weapons. I added a cutter, and when that was working, I'd stick to that. When my sinker was working, I'd stick to the sinker and not to the cutter. So, you know, I was able to make adjustments in the game really quick, and this is where JP was really, really helpful, and he saw it. And I think as we went on through the season, we learned from each other, and it was something that we built that special bond. And he knew me he knew me really, really good, and you know, we worked together, and it's something that you just kind of got to make the quick adjustment and not let it get in your head.
You know, it's something that I don't know if anybody really talked about that much this year. I know there was a lot of talk about JP and the job he did and his rookie season, and he was outstanding. But the thing that I don't know how many people talked about was the fact that here you are in your third year, and you're dealing with your third different starting catcher in as many seasons. How difficult is that on a pitching staff?
Well, you know, I've been blessed. You know, we've had some good catchers come through here the 3 years that I've been here. You know, we had Barajas was good when I was here, and John Buck was, you know, had a career year with us. And you know, now JP comes in, and he's a guy that's willing to work, you know, and willing to learn. To him, he can go 0-4, but if the pitching staff, you know, does his job out there, he's happy. He's a happy guy, and that's how he is. And you know, and is it difficult? I don't think so. You just got to learn how to adjust, you know? You just got to learn how to adjust. And I think all our pitchers have done that adjustment quick. I mean, for some guys, it hasn't been easy, you know, because JP has a job that he has to learn every single guy. And I think it's a learning process, and he's only going to get better.
And at least you get this spring, you'll come back, and the chances are pretty good that you're going to wind up with the same guy 2 years in a row. So that'll be kind of nice for you.
Yeah, it should be nice, you know, and we're looking forward to it, and it should be another good year for him, and you know, he obviously wants to get better, and we'll see.
And he's getting a dog this off season, so you can have a little bit of company there. We are going to start off with John in Perry Sound. John, say hello to Ricky Romero.
Hi, Ricky.
John, how you doing?
Mike, this is John Cook, remember, from the old days.
Oh, from the old days. John Cook. Yes, yeah. Man, I beat with impunity in regularly in football pools back
yeah,
in the day.
Yeah, it's just that one season, so you messed me up pretty bad, so. at any rate, I mean, I think tonight with Greinke going, you get a good example of a guy who's crossed leagues and had success right off the bat. You also have his teammate Markham, former teammate of yours, Ricky, who's also enjoyed success right off the bat. I'm just wondering if that means that the old sort of difference between leagues is if it's dead and gone now. I mean, if guys can cross over and just enjoy instant success. I mean, is that an example of just the strike zones being more or less the same now, and there not being that mystique of having to learn a different strike zone? And
no, I don't think so. I don't think the strike zone has anything to do with it. You know, both umpires ump on both sides of the league, so you know it has nothing to do with that. You know, they're still facing big league hitters. You know, so it really doesn't. I think it's just, you know, they're showcasing what they've been able to do in the American League. You know, they're good pitchers, and that's why they've had success, and that's all there is to it. You know, you throw strikes and you make your ball move, you know, you're successful in this league. And you know, usually when you're in trouble, it's guys that don't throw strikes and stuff like that. That's what gets you in trouble. But those guys are professionals at what they do, and that's why they've been successful.
Do you find when you pitch in the National League in their ballparks that you get a bit of a break because the pitcher has to hit against you? And I know the one game you pitched in Atlanta, maybe that's not the right game to bring up, but it seems like there aren't too many chances to catch your breath when you're going through an American League lineup, and maybe more often in the National League that you're able to do that.
Well, I think, yeah, I think I at some point the National League is at an advantage, you know. You got to face a pitcher twice, two, maybe three times a game. And, you know, those are three outs, you know. Every out is important in baseball. And you know, whereas in the American League, you got a DH, you know, you got a David Ortiz, or you got a Mark Teixeira sometimes playing DH, or, something like that, you know, or an Alex Rodriguez DHing. So, you know, we are, it's a little bit of a disadvantage, but at the same time, you know, I think it just makes it that much better. And I enjoy the competition, and I love having the DH. I don't mind, you know, it is what it is, and you got to deal with it.
Absolutely true. Ricky, we go to the Twitter, and there's a question for you from at Chris WB Porter. And a lot of Blue Jays fans have asked me this, and I don't know. You see the Brewers with their whole beast mode thing. We know that you guys have the T-shirts, and you've been talking about beast mode since spring training. Who made it up? Who stole it from who?
I really don't know, man. You know, it just kind of started with us last year. It's just like John Buck used to always call everyone, hey, or used to call some guys, you know, hey, you're a beast. So it just kind of evolved from there, you know, but, you know, other guys claim that they use it first, and to me, I really don't care, you know. It is what it is. It's no one's word, you know. If it belongs to everyone, then it belongs to everyone. There's not really one person, I think, that made it up. You know, to me, it doesn't really matter, but, you know, we kind of just started using it this year, and it stuck with the team, you know, and it stuck with other teams. I see Milwaukee, like I said, Milwaukee uses it, and, you know, I have no problem with it.
All right, but hear that. Ricky Romero said last year the Blue Jays had it with John Buck in the beast mode. Jim is in Toronto. Jim, you're on with Ricky Romero.
Hello, Ricky. A pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, nice talking to you.
My question for you is, you know, pitchers, as perhaps to be expected, get a whole lot of criticism when things aren't going well and a whole lot of praise when things are going well. Are there specific things that fans or media say or think about pitchers that are, you know, misconceptions or just, you know, kind of unfair or, you know, things like that, things that we might say that we think are the case and really we don't know what we're talking about because we're not pitchers?
Well, you know, when you play a sport, no matter what sport it is, you know, you got to be open to criticism. You know, you're going to be criticized and you got to be able to take it. And, you know, you can't let it bother you. And, you know, for me, I don't really try to pay attention to what's being said about me in the media. You know, it was pretty obvious this year when I came in. I'm using me as an example. I came in and people were saying, oh, yeah, he's not going to be an ace, you know, or he's not going to do this, or, you know, who knows if last year, you know, is he going to get better from last year? And stuff like that, you kind of read it and you use it as motivation. For me, I do. You know, I don't let it – it's not like I go to bed and I can't sleep because somebody wrote something bad about me. It's, you know, I've been through worse – things in my life and worse criticism that, you know, this is nothing. You know, I see it as a challenge and I enjoy it. And you know, it's something that to me, I'll continue to enjoy and I love proving people wrong and that's what I like to do.
And it is kind of amazing. You talk about, you know, little bits of criticism that you may have gotten where people were wondering whether you had what it takes to take over as the number one starter with, you know, Halliday gone 2 years ago, Markham gone last year. But to me, that's nothing compared to what people were saying about you 3 years ago. And the way that you kind of came up and proved to people calling you 3 years after you being drafted a bust, you've really proven all those people wrong. But did you hear any of that stuff way back when?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, like you said, I was out, you know, coming out of high school, you know, I wasn't given a chance right away to start at Cal State Fullerton. It was always, I had to work for it, and, you know, I didn't pitch much my freshman year, and, you know, my sophomore year I came in, and people were like, well, you know, you haven't really lived up to what we wanted you to live up to, and, you know, you're going to go back to the bullpen. And 2-3 injuries later, they had to use me as a starter, and I never looked back from that point on. So I've always, you know, at times I've been criticized about it, but like I said, I've never let it get to me. I just continue to use it as motivation, and I just feed off of it, and that's what I think. I go out there, and it's like, you know, I pitch for my team first and foremost, and go out there and just compete.
With Ricky Romero, did a sensational job competing this year, 15 wins, a 2.92 ERA, career lows in pretty much everything. Let's go to Tori in London. Tori, you're on with Ricky Romero.
Hi. Hi, Ricky.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. My question was, if you're playing, like, a good team like Texas or Boston or the Yankees or something, is there a special way you prepare, or do you treat it like just a normal game, try not to get nervous?
Oh, yeah.
you know, it's just another opponent that you got to face. Whether it's, no matter who your opponent is, I always respect them. I always have the ultimate respect for my opponent, no matter who it is. And you try to prepare the same. And, you know, for me, I go out, I go in, the day of the game, I watch video and kind of just see little things that I've done against certain hitters in the past and stuff like that. And you go out there and you just try to be as relaxed as possible and not try to get too amped up in certain situations. You know, as time has gone on, I've learned to do that, and you just treat it as another game.
I got a follow-up, but we got too many people on the phone, so I want to get to more of them and less of me. Is this Frano in Toronto? Frano.
You got it right, brother. Thanks.
All right.
Ricky, a huge fan, man. I want to ask you about one specific game. It was your last couple starts. The boys made, I think, 3 errors behind you, and you know, most pitchers would have lost their cool. I was really impressed with how you kept yourself composed. You got out of the inning pretty clean, and I remember there was a camera shot of you in the dugout. You kind of shouted, you screamed something at the boys. Can you share with us what you shared? What you said there? I don't think it was a curse word.
You know, like I said, obviously I can't say what I said. I can't say on the radio what I said, but, you know, it was like a let's go, you know, let's pick it up, you know. You know, I'll never, like I said, I have respect for my opponents and the most respect for my teammates. Errors are part of the game, and they're going to happen, and you can't let it get to you. My job is still to go out there and continue to pitch no matter what and try to get as deep as possible in the ballgame. And knowing that it was going to be my last start, you know, I wasn't going to let anything get in the way, and I was going to try to go out on top. Obviously, that didn't happen, but no one's to blame for. Like I said, errors are part of the game, and there's nothing you can do but hold your head high and continue to pitch.
Do you feel like that stuff kind of balances out with the spectacular defensive plays that are made behind you? You get outs on balls you don't expect to have gotten outs on, and that kind of balances the boots?
Yeah, I mean, it balances that itself out. You know, I'm sure I can guarantee you that none of those guys want to make errors. None of them, you know. And they feel just as bad, you know, when they make an error. And you're out there, you're competing, and all these guys are competitors, and they want to win. So, you know, you can't blame them for that. They're playing hard, and that's all I ever ask. You know, just play the game hard and play it to win, and that's it. You know, like I said, errors are part of baseball, and they always will be.
We're with Ricky Romero, and he's taking your phone calls. We'll get to a few more before we go. Chris is in Brampton. Chris, you're on with Ricky.
Good evening, gentlemen. My question, Ricky, and Mike, please join in if you like. I was very surprised last night during the Tigers-Texas game that Jim Leland was, like, already saying Benoit and Valverde were not to be used. How can a manager really say that when your next game could be in March and April? And you being the ultra competitor, Ricky, who lives and dies with every pitch, and that's great, don't ever lose that, I found that really shocking.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, you know, from a baseball standpoint, from being, you know, a player, in that situation, when your closer has gone 2 innings, you know, really, closers are not really used to going 2 innings in a ball game, and neither is your middle reliever, your setup guy is usually 1 inning guy too, and
both,
you
know, of them had pitched 3 days in a row.
Yeah, and it's pretty obvious, you know, you kind of get a sense of what's going on with the game, and Texas is not, you know, they know what's going on, and obviously they knew those guys were going to be down, so for him to come out and say it, I mean, it's just the way it is, and they had other guys to fill in that spot, and they did.
And Leland also talking about Justin Verlander in game 5 of the first round, where he said, absolutely not, under no circumstances am I going to use Verlander. Same thing with moving him to game 4 of this series, since he only pitched 4 innings because of the rain in game 1. And both times Verlander said he went to him, he presented his case, he begged him, he said, look, I'm fine, I can go, let me go. And Leland said no. I'm thinking that that's the least you would expect out of Verlander, and that someone like you would likely do that very same thing.
Oh, yeah, I mean... There's been certain situations where I've kind of gone up to the manager, you know, not just Farrell, but when Cito was here, and I was like, leave me in, I'm good for one more. And they kind of look at you like, no, like, go sit down or go inside and do your stuff, you know. But you kind of try to plead your case. But You know, like I said, that's a competitor in you, you know, not wanting to come out in ball games. I never want to give the ball down up to anyone. You know, that's just the competitor that I am. And I learned it from Halliday when he was here. You know, you finish what you start, and I hate coming out in the middle of an inning. Does it happen at times? Yes, it does. But, you know, I try to finish what I start no matter what and just go from there.
How often do you do that when you're out there going, you know what, no, let me finish this. I got this guy, no problem. How often in the back of your mind are you thinking, you know, I'm probably really done here?
You kind of know. Obviously, when you, you know, sometimes through 7 or 8 innings, you take a peek at how many pitches you have, and you kind of get a sense, you know, I think I've had enough for the night. But, you know, in playoff games, man, I'm sure it's different. You know, I haven't experienced it yet, but I'm sure you can throw 200 pitches if you're a starter, you know, and you won't feel tired. You kind of get a sense for it at times. You know, it's obviously, if it's been a grind for you all game, the managers see it, the pitching coach sees it, and they kind of know when to make the move, and they know when you're on and when you're in a good rhythm, and it's almost, it's like I said, it's just a sense of the game, and when you get that sense of the game as a manager, as a player, you kind of go make your decisions off of that.
With Ricky Romero here, and another question off the Twitter from @ Wuzu Pay. He says his son's been trying to call, hasn't been able to get through, and I know the lines are jammed, and I apologize for that. He wants to know what the fastest pitch Ricky has been clocked at ever was. And I'll add to that by, since we're looking on Twitter, reminding people that Brandon Morrow once said on Twitter that most of his sliders are faster than your hardest fastball.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really check the gun at times. You know, I check it more on other guys that throw hard. I've never seen myself as a hard thrower, you know. But, you know, there's been a few instances where I feel like I let it go, and I do take a little small peek back. Or actually, when I'm watching video and you see the TV radar gun, you know. But Brandon always seems to say that that's just a juice gun, you know, that it doesn't count. It's always a competition, but. What I've seen, you know, I've seen a 96 up there, you know, and it's always funny when you bring it up, and it's just, you know, we have fun with it.
Yeah, it does seem like you guys are having a lot of fun. Couple more calls. Julia is in Toronto. Julia, you're on with Ricky Romero.
Hi, Ricky.
Hi, Julia. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
I'm a really big fan, but I just had a question for you. I grew up in the same area as John Axford, the closer for the Brewers, and so I know a lot about his story and how he was picked up by the Yankees and then basically let go, and then the Brewers happened to come to Hamilton one day and then they picked him up and basically had him make a change in his pitch, and that made a huge difference for him. Do you ever think about things like that with you, where if you'd done something different from the beginning or if you made a change, how that could impact you?
You know what? Actually, everything that I've always been a firm believer that everything that happens for a reason. It doesn't matter what, you know. At the time, you know, when I was struggling in AA, and I was struggling bad, and they kind of viewed me as, you know, he's not going to make it, you know, he's been a bust. Like I talked about earlier, I used it as motivation, and I didn't let it get me down. And I always said it, you know, everything happens for a reason, and it's only going to get better if I stay with myself and continue to work hard. And would I have done anything different? Absolutely not. I think those struggles coming up made me the pitcher that I am today, and made me even mentally stronger than what I already was. And you gotta have thick skin in this sport, and. I think that's what I was able to do. I was able to brush off whatever was being said about me and just focus on myself and go out there and polish my game. And that's what I did. And little by little, you know, stuff starts everything just kind of starts going from there. And next thing you know, I'm in my third year in the big leagues and going on my fourth. And you know, and I have no regrets, and I wouldn't change anything.
It is an amazing story. The Axford thing. He was a cell phone salesman at one point, there are so many different routes that guys can take to the big leagues. Brandon Beachy with the Brewers, I mean, with the Braves. There are these guys who just get plucked out of these independent leagues, and they're the reverse. The first round picks who make it immediately. The first round picks who struggle on their way up and wind up breaking through. There are so many different roads.
I think a lot of players, you know, in the big leagues have stories of their own, and it's always fun when you get to listen to some of the stories and realize how much hard work it takes guys to get up there, and those guys are the ones that are successful. Why? Because they don't take it for granted. They're up there and they're working hard every day, and you like to see that, and that's special.
One more call for Ricky Romero. It's going to be Wayne in Markham. Wayne, say hello to Ricky. Make it good, because you're the last one.
Wow, what an honor. Ricky, it's a pleasure speaking with you. Quick question. Just with regards to the leadership role, we know that that's something that you've embraced. I'm just curious now that is with leadership comes expectations. I'm wondering, in terms of the rest of the pitching staff, looking to you now as the bona fide ace, how is that in the locker room and on the field, how has that changed your game?
Well, you know, like you said, I've embraced a leadership role, and it's something that I've enjoyed. Has it changed my game? No. You know, I continue to just go out there. I'm not a really big vocal leader. You know, I don't like to be big rah-rah like that. You know, you might see me goofing around the dugout every once in a while, putting a bubble on Cecil's head or something like that. You know, it's when I'm not on my days off and I'm not pitching, you know, I like to have fun. But I don't think I've changed anything to my game. You know, I'm still as focused as anyone. I still get my work done whenever it needs to get done, and I'm serious about that. You know, I'm serious about every start that I make. You know, you understand that with this game, you're going to have your ups and you're going to have your downs, and you just got to continue to get better. And I love, you know, being, you know, labeled a leader, you know, and hopefully all of us, all 25 guys next year, are able to lead by example in their own way. And, you know, that's what good teams do, and I'm looking forward to it.
And we're looking forward to watching you continue to grow and develop in your career, Ricky, and get better and better, we hope, although you left yourself a pretty hard act to follow this year. And eventually, maybe sooner than later, take the Blue Jays into the postseason, and we won't have the opportunity to do these pregame shows with you, because you'll be busy playing. Thanks so much for your time. Before I let you go, like every Blue Jay, I know you talked about how numbers aren't a big deal for you, but I like to pull out some of the numbers from the season that you might not have been aware of, just to kind of point out what a great year you had. And there are a few that really jump out at me that you might not know. I know they talk about how important, obviously, counts are, and how you're, you know, ahead in the count, a much better hitter than being behind in the count. But this year, when you got behind 2-0, and the hitter put the ball in play on a 2-0 pitch, they hit 138 against you. They hit 167 in 3-1 counts, which is pretty amazing. What do you think of that?
Pull out these numbers, and I'm like, what the hell?
I got an even better one for you too. But I think those two might have to do with the changeup, because you're not afraid to throw that changeup in a fastball count.
Not at all.
The last number I'm going to give you is this. When you had a runner on third with less than two outs, and it happened 36 times this year, with a runner on third and less than two outs, you held the opposition to a batting average of 97 and an opponent's on-base percentage of just .388. So that's coming up huge when it counts the most.
Well, I don't know what to say.
Keep it up. That's what we're all hoping for you. Ricky, thanks so much for this. Have a great winter, and we really look forward to seeing you in Dunedin. And it's really exciting time to be a Blue Jay, to be a Blue Jay watcher, and to be a Blue Jay fan. So there's all these people who got a chance to call and talk to you. Thanks so much for the year. It was great to watch, and we look forward to a lot more.
Thank you. Anytime.